Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today with Ezekiel Elliott. I'm starting to feel sorry for Zeke. As his holdout and contract negotiations continue to drag on, Zeke and his camp justifiably have turned more desperate, aggressive, and negative. A week after predicting Dallas quarterback Dak Prescott would be a bum upon signing a new contract, Zeke surrogate Marshall Faulk attacked the deal the Cowboys recently gave inside linebacker Jalen Smith.
If you think about this, and I'm not counting another man's money, but if you think about what Jalen Smith did and what he got compared to what Zeke has done and what he is asking for, it's not even close. They drafted a linebacker in the first round last year. If they thought so much of Jalen, I mean, you dropped another linebacker in the first round?
Everything Faulk just said is straight gospel. Based on production and value to his team, Zeke is arguably the best running back in football.
Wow.
Jalen Smith hasn't even qualified for the Pro Bowl yet, and Dallas has a collection of inside linebackers who could replace Smith if he were injured. Smith just inked a shiny new $65 million contract. What is Zeke worth? He's certainly worth more than Smith, and Zeke is more valuable than Dak Prescott. Marshall Faulk is the perfect surrogate for Zeke. Faulk was the engine that drove the St. Louis Rams Super Bowl offenses in the early 2000s. After a 12-day holdout, Faulk signed the richest contract in Rams history in 1999. He was the MVP of the NFL in 2000 and should have won it again in 2001. Faulk believes in Elliott's cause. Faulk has witnessed the NFL devalue the running back position. Elliott's holdout is personal for Faulk, and I don't blame him for feeling that way. The narrative on NFL running backs is distorted and unfair. The NFL is paying wide receivers more money than running backs, but running backs are doing far more work than wide receivers. Ezekiel Elliott ran the ball 304 times and caught the ball 77 times last season. That's 381 touches. Saints receiver Michael Thomas, the same draft class as Elliott, and also Elliott's teammate at Ohio State, caught 125 passes last season. The Saints just gave him a new five-year contract worth $100 million. But Zeke can't get paid. He's going to touch the football three times more than Thomas. He's going to absorb three times more punishment as Thomas. But Zeke can't get paid. There's something wrong with the system. I don't blame Zeke or Chargers running back Melvin Gordon for sitting. I don't blame Le'Veon Bell for his year-long holdout last season. We can blame the collective bargaining agreement and the rookie wage scale. It doesn't matter who or what you blame. The fact is the system isn't fair to running backs. They're still the most exciting players in football. Zeke isn't being greedy or foolish with his holdout. He's doing what needs to be done. All right, joining the desk now, our Hall of Famer, Eric Dickerson, and hopefully my choir, and Warren Sharp.
Running back.
Of Sharp Football Analysis. Sharp's making his first appearance. Love you, Warren. You got the best information in football. But Marcellus, we're going to start with you.
Yeah.
Is Zeke's holdout proof the value of running backs has been unfairly diminished?
Oh, man, you're tugging at my heartstrings right here. You know you're talking to a former running back, one of the best to ever do it at the Pop Warner level.
And I'm sitting right next to my idol. I only had two idols in sports, John Elway and this dude, because I wanted to be that guy. But let's just be real. Let's make some sense out of this. I'm sorry, running backs. I'm sorry, all you guys who are toting the rock, but your days have been numbered. And really, your shine is behind you, because it makes no sense to continue to increase the value of a position that goes through the rigors as a running back does. Let me give you some examples, because it's happening outside of the forest of football. And sometimes you can't see the forest from the trees, right, Whitlock? So let's leave.
We'll see. I can't wait to hear what you say here.
Let's leave football and go to the NBA, when all of a sudden, because of the emergence of analytics and critical analysis of the game, the three-point shot was emphasized. And why was it emphasized? One, the simple math, duh, three is more than two. But more importantly, man, you got to go through hell to get two in the paint versus there's not that much resistance out here at the three-point line. What happened in football? All of a sudden, that long handoff turned into the short pass. And if you look
to Zeke, but go ahead.
To Zeke, yeah. And you sound like a fantasy player who's sitting there like, Zeke had 20 carries and 100 yards. Woo! And you know what your boy is sitting there? Oh, Michael Thomas has 6 catches for 100 yards. Which one's more efficient? Think about this. This is where the game has evolved to. You can now get your receivers involved in a more efficient model that is actually taking some of the physicality and rigors away. Do you want to face 8, 9 in a box like Eric Dickerson did for 4.5 yards in a cloud of dust? Or do you just want to beat the corner and the safety and see pay dirt every single time? I'm sorry. It's my position. It's my heart. But you got to evolve the passing game, and the days of the running game are behind us.
How do you sound, Marcella? You like sound ridiculous.
I know
here.
I do.
Come on, man. First of all, the running back is always important to a game.
I'm listening.
If you run the football, that's how you control the clock. You control the game. If you have a top-notch running back, Dallas has a top-notch running back, possibly the best running back in the NFL. And the one thing about running the football is that it wears the defense down. He's not just running the football. He's catching the football out of the backfield. In the NFL, you're never going to have 10 top running backs. You're never going to have 10 top quarterbacks. You're going to have 4 or 5 top running backs anytime. You got 4 or 5 top quarterbacks. But you're going to pay the bum quarterback. You're going to pay the quarterback no matter, well, he's the quarterback. He's got to make the money. That's not always true. You pay the best player. Zeke is the best player on the Dallas Cowboys football team. He gives them the best chance to win. Why don't you pay him? But on the other hand, I understand where Jerry Jones is coming from. He has 2 years left.
Thomas had 2 years left.
There you go. There you go. But as a running back, they look at, well, if we can keep him locked in, because you know he's going to run the football a lot. He's going to wear him out no matter what. If he gets hurt, let's say Zeke got hurt this year. You think next year they say, well, he got hurt, we're going to give him money. We're going
to
give him money.
You know Michael Thomas went to Vegas a couple times before. We didn't hear about it. You know why? Because he knows how to be a franchise player. Come on, Zeke, act right.
Look, Jason, I got to disagree with you on this one. Eric, it's hard for me to disagree with a stud like yourself.
Yes.
However, Marcellus is right. The running back position is devalued, justifiably so. Mm. Passing is 4 times more efficient to winning games in today's NFL than is running the football.
Then why don't they throw the ball 4 times more?
What we
Some teams will eventually
get to the point where you will pass to get a lead and then you will run to win the game.
Ooh.
And more teams are going to start doing that. Passing on first down instead of running the ball on first down is substantially more efficient.
Yes.
So where we're going to get to in the NFL is if we end up paying these guys after their rookie deals are up, paying them a lot, teams are just going to go through and cycle through all types of rookie deal running backs and just leave the guys who want to get paid a lot of money on the sidelines because you can replace these guys. Look at Zeke. It's very difficult to separate out Zeke's production from his offensive line. It's one of the hardest things to do to separate out how good a running back is behind that offensive line. And Dallas has the highest paid NFL offensive line in the league. They've had it for 2 straight years now.
So when he catches 77 passes, we're crediting the offensive line for that?
No, teams need to pass the ball more to running backs, but you can be an efficient pass-catching running back. You don't need to be Ezekiel Elliott-style running back.
Well, the greatest alignment in NFL history is the quarterback. I mean, let me tell you, I played against Tom Brady. I played against Peyton Manning. I don't give a damn who they had up front, and sometimes they didn't have great offensive lines. But you know what? 1-2, ball gone. 1-2, ball gone. And that wears a defense down
mentally.
You know
who that 1-2 in Dallas is, too?
Oh, that's 1-2. No, let me finish. And you talking about Zeke catching 77 passes? You're making my point, brother. Why is he now in the passing game? Why is he now a pseudo wide receiver? Because they even know as a coordinator, I need to get this guy in the efficient model, which is the passing game.
And they also have a quarterback limited.
If that's the case,
why don't you take
the running back out the field? Just get rid of it.
Was Peyton Manning limited when he was throwing about Aaron and James and Marshall Faulk in his first year? Was he limited? It's not about how limited you are. It's how smart you are.
Look at the two best running backs in the NFL in 2017. You had Le'Veon Bell and you had Todd Gurley. Both of those guys, by necessity, had to be replaced in 2018. James Conner comes in. produces a better efficiency, better statistics behind that line than did Le'Veon Bell.
Preach.
And you know, off Pittsburgh the streets the doing playoffs, nothing.
Right? You know Pittsburgh
doing
was
nothing.
At home with me and you.
C.J. Anderson comes in.
Pittsburgh
on,
was at home with me and you.
That's not because of their running back, though. Oh. That's not because of their running back. Ooh. And C.J. Anderson comes off the streets doing nothing in Carolina and outproduces, for a limited sample size, outproduces
key
Todd word. Gurley's production.
Your key word there, limited. And that's what the key word. That's why I say limited. The thing is, if you have a back, and it's not a bunch of them. It's very few. If you have a running back, they're going to use that back. The Rams use Todd Gurley. The Cowboys use Zeke Elliott. The Pittsburgh Steelers, they had, and they use Le'Veon Bell. You're going to use that guy. You're going to see the big numbers out of him. Look, I know we have a small window that we have to run between, for sure, because we're not going to be that guy for 10 years. We're going to be that guy from 3 to 5 to maybe 7 years. Then you're going to see a drop-off. But you got him. You've got to pay him if you have him. I mean, as the Cowboys go, as Zeke goes, the Cowboys go.
Zeke right now is moving into his real prime. I went and looked at, like, Marshall Faulk. And Marshall Faulk really wasn't the Marshall Faulk that we know until age 26.
Oh, stop Zeke. That. You didn't see him at San Diego State his first year?
Well,
in the NFL.
Well, I'm the best
so,
player ever.
Look, Zeke is only 23, 24 years old. This is his time, and I don't blame this dude for like, hey, man, y'all not going to wait till my time is up to pay me. Mm. When they paid Marshall Faulk in St. Louis in 1999, for the next 3 years, he was arguably the best player in football, drove the greatest show on turf offense to record numbers, made them a two-time Super Bowl appear, won a Super Bowl. This is Zeke's time. He deserves this money in Dallas. Now, if he were playing with one of these all-time great quarterbacks or Pro Bowl-level quarterback, I would be like, hey, man, you know, pump the brakes. But he's playing with a guy that needs to dump the ball to him. And if this guy's going to get 400 touches, if he's going to take all that punishment and they're the ones carrying the load, driving the offense, I just think this is wrong and they need to change the system to compensate these guys.
Well, look, that sounds great in the Hallmark card, but when I'm talking about scouting report, being on defense, I'm not trying to hear, this is a sad story for your position. Oh, my God, you need to get it before your prime. I understand. I become heartless. What? I become objective. I become a part of the meritocracy. Listen to this. If you look at them as a whole, you're like, Zeke runs that thing over there offensively. Respect to that. But you also have to respect, what's the situation? What's the dynamics? What's the contracts? What's the terms? What's their offensive line? Can Dak actually be the engine for that team? You don't know that answer definitively for us to wreck and say we're going to give all our money to our running back.
I guarantee you.
Guarantee?
When you're in that scouting department, when you're in that meeting, game planning for the game.
Right.
I guarantee you Zeke's the first name that comes up.
You're right.
A good example. We played the Cowboys in the playoffs. You know what the defense was saying? 21's not going to beat us. They weren't worried about this. They weren't worried about that. 21 ain't going to beat us.
And you know what?
21. And 21 didn't beat us.
No, he didn't. He had 47 yards.
Exactly. That's it.
And you know what? They only lost by 8 points.
But it's still they still
lost. Hold on. You, Eric Dickerson, in your greatest games, in your biggest games, if you went out there for 20 carries and 47 yards, is it the defense or was it ED?
It depends on the offensive line.
If have you ever given performances?
I'll say this much here.
Yes,
I say this much here. Yes, I have. I've had some performances, but I didn't have a quarterback. If I'd have had a Elway, a Marino, it'd have been a different. It'd been a different look. If I'd have had a Dak Prescott, you as a running back, you always want a quarterback if you're lucky enough to get one.
I know that.
And a quarterback wants a running back. Elway. Let's use John Elway. Hold on. John Elway.
My other
Super Bowls, he got what?
He got two at the end. What is running back?
But that's what I'm saying.
You're flipping it. It's what I'm saying. When you're Eric Dickerson, when you are that tremendous Ezekiel Elliott, you have to overcome the fact that there is some adversity coming your way from the defense. They're trying to stop you. Oh, they ain't not trying to stop you every other game you play in?
Oh, of course they are.
So how do you get 47 yards in the biggest moment of your career and then months later, last seen on the football field with 47 yards, want a new contract with 2 years left? How can you have the audacity to pull that off?
You know, you're talking about, say, one game. Oh, right, no, that's a big game. It's a big game.
In his 3 years, that's the biggest.
But I say again, when they're honing in on one guy, they're going to play 8-9-man front. It's hard to run against because that's the quarterback.
That's not normal.
That's
the quarterback's
you,
job to back him off. That's
when
the
they was game planning for Bruce Smith, did they not pay him?
Yeah,
when they was game planning for LT, Deion Sanders, the man that's getting game planned for it needs to be paid. Zeke Elliott needs to be paid.
Hey, guys. Jason Whitlock here. September is National Life Insurance Awareness Month. Most people aren't aware of that. In fact, most people aren't aware they need life insurance at all. That's why 40% of Americans don't have it. But getting life insurance doesn't need to be difficult or expensive. Right now, prices are the lowest they've been in 20 years, and Policy Genius has made it easier than ever to get covered. Policy Genius is the easy way to shop for life insurance online. In minutes, you can compare quotes from top insurers to find your best price. Once you apply, the Policy Genius team will handle all paperwork and red tape. If you need life insurance but you just haven't gotten around to it, National Life Insurance Awareness Month is as good a time as any to get started. Go to PolicyGenius.com, get quotes, and apply in minutes. You can do the whole thing on your phone right now. Policy Genius, the easy way to compare and buy life insurance.
Eric Dickerson's back. We're joined now by former Pro Bowl linebacker LeVar Arrington. Let's move to Jerry Jones,
LA,
who still has yet to close new deals with his three biggest stars. But his negotiation taxes are actually drawing some scrutiny. The NFLPA is reportedly investigating the Cowboys for bypassing agents to deal directly with players. One agent reportedly told the NFL Network's Mike Garofalo that the team makes a habit of the practice, as Garofalo explains, quote, he said that the team is notorious for trying to go around the agent, going right to the player and getting the player to believe, hey, it's better to be a Dallas Cowboy and take less money and be here. He said, in this case, the difference is Ezekiel Elliott and even Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper, they're not buying it. They're actually listening to their representation. All right, I don't have a problem with this. I'm a bit of a Jerry Jones homer and defender. Jerry's just spitting facts. The Cowboys and Texas take care of their players post-career better than other organizations. And there's some value there that Jerry's trying to explain to these guys that's not necessarily there with other organizations.
He is spitting facts, but he's spitting the facts in an incomplete circle just because that's manipulation at its core. Now, when you're Jerry Jones, you're smart enough to know that if I'm going to say it in front of you, I should be able to say the same thing in front of your agent and have that be what the reality is. Why you don't say this in front of the agent or highlight this the same with the same emphasis is because you want to get directly to this guy without him calculating what the other position could and may be. We've seen this happen a lot, and this is not a football issue per se, but the Central Park Five story comes to mind. Brian Banks, who came on our show, comes to mind. Remember in those situations, both times there was a time when there was a police officer, an accused person, and they said, no, you can't talk to your mom right now. No, you can't talk to anyone else. You can't talk to your lawyer right now. Just me and you, let's convey what's really happening. I know that dynamic personally because I have kids. And when you have your kids, you got to make sure that you and mom and the kid are on the same page. I'm not talking directly to you because I need this to be cemented by all. Why would I talk to you and leave them out? Because when you talk to them, things are going to shift. Things are going to change. Recalculate. Jerry thinks he's slick. He's trying to do something that is actually at his core a disadvantage for the guy who's not hearing the alternative version which the agent is providing.
Well, you know, I'm with you,
Whitlock.
Freudian slip. I get it.
Whitlock. I think, I mean, I like Jerry, and I think Jerry does right, pretty much right by his players. I mean, first of all, I'm not a big fan of agents anyway.
Thank you.
Really, in a sense, you really don't need an agent. All you really need
is a lawyer.
You need a lawyer. A lawyer and an accountant. That's all you need. You don't need these agents. The other agent mad because he ain't getting his 3%.
Y'all got bad agents.
Oh, I say this much here. You got $100 million a year before we play the same position. Mm-hmm. I'm going to come out. I'm not going to get $200 million. It's going to be somewhere around that $150, $120, you know, same contract. Why do I need an agent for that? If I get a lawyer and say, look, I'll give you $200,000 to do my contract.
You ready?
Here's my paperwork.
You want the answer? Is your lawyer looking at the landscape, letting you know all opportunities, or is he just now going to dive into that one opportunity of the contract you placed in front of him?
That's what an agent does.
I don't want to dive down that hole, but we can have that discussion.
Agents don't do everything. Agents don't do everything.
They shouldn't.
You don't want your right hand knowing what your left hand doing.
Right.
You want to keep them separate. You got to keep them separate. So for me, I still feel like you got to have somebody look over the cut. You can't just have, okay, Jerry, no problem, I'll sign this. No, you can't do that kind of deal. But right. I just feel like the agents, man, I'm not a big fan of agents.
I'm not even going to go down the whole not a fan versus a fan. The reality of here is that This is merely something that is drawn up to minimize what the athlete represents. Our intelligence level is of sound mind, sound body, as it appears in each situation. You don't need to have an agent be your voice and your soundboard the entire time. That's the difference between the Central Park Five and what you're talking about. And here is, you got a professional that's dealing with his employer, not with the law. That's not an indictment. You're not going to jail based upon giving information that they forced you to say.
There are consequences involved. Consequences.
This is your employer, and you're the employee. That agent is your employee. You are that agent's employer. And I think the way the narrative is drawn so many times is that these agents are basically, they're the employer to the employee as well. And that's not the situation. Most business deals that I've been a part of outside of the game of football, I have been present with every single conversation that has taken place, unless we got it to a point of where it's just formalities. There's no problem with an owner, a franchise, an employer talking to his employee. Your agent is not the employee of that franchise. You are. You protect your best interests in that situation.
My issue is, because what Jerry's saying is, post-career, there's a lot of value to being a Cowboy. And you know who gets none of that post-career money? Your agent.
Your agent.
And so your agent is fighting for every dime right now. He's not concerned about your post-career money. That's what Jerry's trying to communicate to Dak and Zeke in particular. These guys drafted by the Cowboys. There's a way for them to have success there and to make money long after, as longtime Dallas Cowboys, particularly if they have success. And that's part of the negotiation that has nothing to do with your agent.
Well, I don't want to paint the agents in a negative light. Hearing what you just said is absolutely correct. Your agent's talking about now, Jerry's talking about later. But the problem is, there's no guarantees later. Like, there was a moment when Jerry was talking to Emmitt Smith. Hey, man, you know what? Being a Cowboy for life is a real thing. And then what happened? Got cut and had to go to Arizona. Still became a Cowboy for life because he's Emmitt Smith. Yeah. But is that going to be Emmitt Smith?
He might be Tony Romo.
It doesn't matter who you are. There's a value lost when you're not Emmitt Smith. So if Emmitt Smith can one day be a Cowboy and not be a Cowboy but be a Cowboy for life, your agent's trying to keep that all congruent.
I don't have a problem with either point. The point I'm making is you're sitting here on camera right now. You get paid to be able to make sense of it the way you just did. So if it's your contract that's on the line, you can make sense of it the way you just did right now.
My agent works for me, yes.
Right. So the reality of it is it's not about if it makes sense to get it later or what the opportunity is later or if it's now. The reality of the point is that player should be in charge of those conversations that are taking place in terms of, do I want to go that direction or do I want to go your direction?
An agent should be present.
Darnell, I just want, don't ever get an agent. That's
yeah, right. That's right.
The takeaway from this conversation.
You're going to be in that chair between 60 years old
with some brand new shirts.
That's why you ain't getting paid now.
You're going to find me one, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, man, agent, right. Let's stay with the Cowboys. We know Marshall Faulk has been working with Zeke in Cabo, getting him ready for the season. And he was recently on the Dan Patrick Show the other day and was asked, if there was a game today, would Zeke be able to play at a high level? And check out his response.
Play, yes. Play at a high level, yes. But I would say possibly run the risk, as any player would who was not in game condition shape, if you tried to play him the workload that the Cowboys use him. I don't think he's in that form that he could go out and do the things that we were accustomed to seeing him do for a whole game.
Guys, do you think Faulk is actually helping or hurting Zeke's negotiations?
I think he's helping because I think they've needed to get very aggressive in their conversation and put some people on blast, and he's doing that so that Zeke's actual agent doesn't have to and Zeke doesn't have to.
He's hurting his cause. In attempt to highlight Zeke's resume, he's also highlighting Zeke's issues. So bringing all this to light in summation is hurting the cause. Zeke had 47 yards, went to Vegas, got in trouble, and then asked for a new deal while he was in Cabo. Whoever is highlighting that timeline is not doing this guy any justice. And I love Marshall Faulk. I like Zeke Elliott. But the problem is, this is not the time to be talking about Zeke, because all the other stuff comes into the equation, as well as the good things.
Well, I think he's helping as much as he can. I mean, you know, a holdout is a holdout. Holdouts are hard. I mean, I've been through a few holdouts myself.
Some big ones.
A few? Damn, ED.
Serious.
The value position.
A few holdouts.
Back in the 80s.
He held out on his
high school. SMU.
I ain't playing at homecoming.
Held out on his college.
SMU. Give me my money.
But Marshall Faulk did bring up one point. It's about when you come back to play, can he play at a high level? I always feel like a back needs to be in camp to get to run the football, some get them hits, because I held out and I came back, hurt my hamstring at the first game back, you know, but I had 150 yards and 3 touchdowns.
My dog!
There you go. But still, I did hurt myself, so there we go.
Only here.
I think he's helping him. And the reason being is for what the GOAT just said. Mm. Listen, when you come back and you have that type of workload that Zeke has, Zeke is making his negotiation stance off of what he's accomplished, not what he's going to do. You got to pay for what you think he's going to do.
Real.
You're putting your money down for what you hope he's going to do based off of what he's already done. That's first and foremost. But secondly, Marshall Faulk is a super, super bright, intelligent man. I mean, he's basically telling you, listen, if you got his deal done, you wouldn't have to worry about him being in Cabo working out. He'd be in camp right now getting those reps that he needs. Mm-hmm. So when y'all bring him back, whatever it is you pay him, if he's not running the ball the way that you need him to run the ball, if he's not performing the way that you want him to perform, it's probably because you have to be in game. You have to be in game situations to get that type of conditioning. And I think that he makes a very, very good point of saying that.
I just want to add one point before we go here. Beyond the t-shirts, if you notice, Darnell's getting free haircuts.
Oh, he
twice
is!
Twice a week.
Crispy on top.
Y'all been just keeping me clean.
He tucking the chain out now, so he gonna put an inch or two on the
His mama gave him that.
Whitlock and Wiley, LeVar Arrington and Warren Sharp are back. Let's move to Baltimore, where Lamar Jackson and the Ravens have been making big claims about revolutionizing the NFL this year, which had a lot of people thinking they would find creative ways to exploit Lamar's ability as a runner. But the quarterback actually says he plans to throw probably 30 passes a game and run the ball less than he did last year. I think that's crazy. Lamar's talking about throwing the ball 30 times a game. That's 408. That would put him in the middle of the pack. I think last year he averaged about 22 passes a game. I think Lamar wants to be a passing pocket quarterback, perhaps more than the Ravens would like for him to be, because the money's in being a passing pocket quarterback. I think that's what's driving Lamar.
I think what's driving him is, one, his ability, which I believe in, which I saw when I went to the Chargers-Ravens game, the first of the two that they had in 3 weeks. And two, just the experience of being a rookie in this league, and no matter what you try to do, it's nearly impossible to slow it down. And knowing that most rookie quarterbacks, when they get into the playoffs, it doesn't end well for the young quarterback first time in the playoffs. You can even look at the newly retired Andrew Luck. Remember when he went against the Patriots? My goodness, 45-7. Like, stop that, young man. Like, it's a whole different animal. So this guy has the ability. Now the game will slow down, and he's starting to talk like he's trusting in that ability. So I'm in no position to discourage him from talking like this based on what I've seen, some of the throws he's made, and the obvious maturation that's going to occur from your second year experience versus your first.
Look, when was Lamar Jackson most efficient as a passer? It was not on second and third down when he was reacting to the defense. It was on first down. On first down, when he threw the football, 60% success rate, 9.1 yards per pass attempt, and a better than average passer rating. On second down, 60% dropped down to 36%, 9.1 yards per attempt dropped down to 6.7 yards per attempt. The point being, when he throws the ball more often on first down, he's getting a defense that's playing the run. And he can do more things with the passing game with a defense that's loaded up to stop him from running the football. That's when he needs to be throwing the football more. So if the Ravens get into a situation where they are trailing, he is going to have to throw the football more. But I think that the Ravens are going to come out this year because he had a full year of training camp, which he didn't have last year, because he had starts and all the film study in the offseason based on what he did last season. He's in a much better place right now. Better offensive coordinator as well that's going to play to his strengths. I think they're going to come out and let him start games and start drives, throwing the football a little bit more, and that will open up the offense. And then it will allow them to be balanced running the football. I think everything that he's said is probably going to go the way that it should. And I think Lamar Jackson is going to have a far more efficient season this year than we expect.
Wow. I need some Dramamine out there. I got motion sickness listening to all them numbers. Jeez, I thought that was very well stated. I look at Lamar Jackson's situation as such. When we say 30 passes, you got to be specific in saying what's dangerous, what isn't dangerous. Okay, when you're managing a quarterback of his athletic ability, which obviously is always overstated when you're talking about a black quarterback that can run, all right? This situation here, if he's averaging 9 yards on that first down with a pass, it's probably a flare pass. It's probably a flat pass, a five and out, drop the ball off pass. And you know why? Because they're expecting to run. And what is a flare pass? It's a pass that could have been a pitch, all right? You're talking about yak. We all know about Yackleberry juice, right? Yards after catch, all right? That's probably where that 9 yard average is coming from. So I think about this in terms of any quarterback. I don't care if it's Aaron Rodgers to Tom Brady to any other quarterback. You look at Tom Brady, he's most efficient when Amendola and Wes Welker and all those guys historically that have played for him, Troy Browns, are doing those crossing routes, Gronkowski crossing routes, outs. It's the timing, it's the spacing, it's the amount of yardage. If you're throwing shorter passes, you're going to have more success. When the defense comes up, if you have an efficient run game and you have completed your short passes, now intermediate to longer passes become more of a successful rate and a successful way of going about doing it. If you're saying 30 yards or more, 15 or more, 30 times a game, you should be fired. You should be fired.
I just think Lamar shouldn't put a number on it. Let's let it play out. Why put any expectations on it? Why talk about this and then if it doesn't materialize, well, Lamar said that they were going to throw 30 times. Or what if they do start throwing 30 times and it's not successful, then it'll be like, oh, are they doing this because this is what Lamar wants to and not what the coaches want to do? I wouldn't have put a number on it. I think, and Warren, I think your stats make perfect sense. And I get it. Let the guy throw on easier downs. That's what you do with a young quarterback. That's how you develop a quarterback. But I still, I think Russell Wilson threw the ball 427 times last year. Mm. And Russell Wilson is one of the best, two or three best quarterbacks in the NFL. I'm not sure if Lamar should be throwing the ball more than Russell Wilson.
Well, I think when you start from a place of disbelief, then everything else is going to be confirmation bias towards that disbelief. So you're saying, I don't really believe you can throw like that, so why you put a number on it? But I hear a lot of good running backs and quarterbacks, when you believe in them, oh, I need to get 20 touches. We don't have a problem with it because we believe you need 20 touches. So this is really just a disbelief conversation. But since you're not in that building, and we're certainly not in his head, why would he ever profess that I don't believe in myself when this is a Heisman Trophy winner who actually has some metrics that was better the year he did win the Heisman?
Who's on the roster, notably, is on the roster with another Heisman Trophy winner that did the same exact thing and fought the same exact fight. And if you don't think that him and RG3 are having those conversations about what took place with him right down the road going down the Beltway, it's...
At the end of the day, though, Lamar's best friends aren't stats. They're wins. The Russell Wilson wins the argument because he's a winner.
And Lamar's a winner too.
Right. But again, my answer to any questions about expectations are we're going to do what's necessary to win. Mm.
Count on the Ravens to be doing that. They spent all offseason looking at the analytics and studying how are we going to maximize our offense's ability to win games during the season. And I think the less the Ravens talk about it, personally, I don't want them talking about their offense at all because I do think it's going to be a different dynamic offense that the rest of the league is not running. That is an inherent edge to any offense that is a little bit different because defenses aren't accustomed to defending them. So I agree with you. I don't want Lamar putting a number on it, but I think we're going to see a really dynamic offense and he's going to be able to pass the ball better than we expect.
This is Jason Whitlock from Speak for Yourself.
and I got a website you have to visit, pristine.com. Pristine Auction has daily auctions ending nightly and with a dollar starting bids. Authenticity is important to Pristine Auction. They guarantee authenticity and come with authentication from only the most trusted sources. Pristine auctions are affordable. Most people don't think they can afford this stuff, but it is much more affordable than you think. A signed Ray Lewis Baltimore Ravens jersey sold for under $100. A Mike Tyson autographed boxing glove sold for under $100. It's quick and free to register, free to bid, and you only pay if you win. Use registration code when joining pristine.com. That's pristine.com, and new users will receive a $5 auction credit. Again, you'll get a $5 auction credit when you register using the code SPEAK, S-P-E-A-K, to sign up for pristine.com. That's pristine.com.
Whitlock and Wiley, LeVar Arrington is back with us, and we're joined now by former NFL defensive back Stanford Rout. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. Darnell, take it away.
Yes, sir. Let's move to Tom Brady, who may have just turned 42, but was voted the most marketable star in the NFL in a new Sports Business Journal survey, just ahead of 23-year-old Patrick Mahomes. But the NFL isn't the only league where old guys are killing it. Forbes magazine says that Michael Jordan is still crushing other NBA players in shoe deal money and is projected to make four times more than the number two guy, LeBron James. So I got to ask you guys, why does Brady and MJ still dominate their sports?
Because their focus is entirely on sports. And that still matters. I think that when it comes to marketing and marketability and things like that, you got to stay away from the polarizing issues. And Jordan and Tom Brady have pretty much done that. And that makes them more marketable.
Man, I can't steal from that, but I can add, I hope. I have a simpler equation. I say it's old money, nostalgia, and the story and folklore of the older players. Think about it. Before there was social media, there were fewer outlets and channels to build your story. So therefore, it was more cemented when you're Michael Jordan. There's no competition to the Michael Jordan story because no one could poke holes in it. Tom Brady also started, got three Super Bowls before social media even existed. Now, what's the average age of the millionaires in our country? 57 years old. What does that mean? Ooh, them old players got some old purchasing power, right? All right. I know it doesn't help in TV ratings to have an old audience, but damn it, it does when you got to go buy something because all the money in this country is old money. There's new money trying to catch up, but they got a long way to go. That's why these guys are winning, because of the bank of their purchasing power of their fan base.
Kids and moms do the decision making on that, though.
No, it's funny you say that. A lot of kids go to a park right now, they're not wearing Jordans. It's older people, us, casually with a suit, trying to impress. Hey, yeah, you can't do it. These kids are wearing J's if they can, but they're wearing Stephs, LeBrons, KDs, Kobes, and it's gonna take forever for them to catch up in park because we keep poking holes in their own marketing story. Oh, you don't believe me? Okay.
I'm out of high school every day, and them feet is, got jumped. They got that. I see them all over.
They are everywhere.
The reason why these guys are able to be so marketable and so brandable is because of the last word I just said. Once your brand transcends anything petty, it will stand the test of time. And with Michael Jordan's brand, Michael Jordan's brand is connected to nostalgia and classic and timeless. He came in a time where it was such an interesting time for the NBA, and Nike put so much behind him, and it took. And once it took, it has not slowed down. It has continued to pick up. Now, with Tom Brady, I feel like it's a little different in the sense that I don't see a product. You know, the product that Michael Jordan's brand has rendered is why he's so, I think, just marketable with Nike. All right, but with Tom Brady, it's probably a whole lot of different things that he's getting money for. Uggs, Under Armour, Time Watches, all kinds of different things. And it's because his brand has transcended being a quarterback and a football player. It's connected to this is what I want to be. This is who I want to be. This is why I want to be it. And those brands never devalue unless they tarnish it. Mm.
With MJ, I would go even simpler than that. You got to look at a guy that won 3 titles. That's something that obviously you don't see too much in the NBA. Then takes a year and a half off, goes, gambles, just sits at home, watch TV, does whatever he wants, and then comes back and then wins 3 more titles. Something that obviously we can see in today's day and age. LeBron James wasn't able to do that, and he hasn't even retired of any sort. I think that urban legend is something that's always going to stick out in a lot of people's minds, especially me, of somebody who actually is playing off the wall, above the rim in their first three-peat, then takes a year and a half off, comes back in the second repeat, in the second three-peat, and pretty much reinvents himself, now going to the fall away, being more of a jump shooter, the fadeaway. I think that most guys would come back from that retirement being still a good player, but not an elite level. And somebody doing that, to me, is something that will always be the urban legend that is Michael Jordan. Going to Tom Brady, I think that if Tom Brady was in high school, he'd be the prom king. You look at him, he wins rings, has 6 of them, has a supermodel for a wife. Mm. He's richer than I don't even know who. Mm-hmm. And when you see somebody that appears to have everything, and he's good looking, I mean, let's just go ahead and call it what it is. When you see something like that, that is something that everybody's going to gravitate behind simply because it looks like he has it made. Now, when you then go and look at Tom Brady's backstory, from everything from high school through college, being a low-round draft pick, and seeing everything he's come from, I think that if you cannot find a way to be a fan of Tom Brady, you're just a hater. Mm.
Mm. Well, let me push back on one part about how you said that these guys are not too political or
polarizing.
Mm-hmm. I went to the Jordan documentary, which was a few months ago, and it's funny that Jordan and Michael Jordan's shoe actually started off in rebellion when the NBA tried to suppress that he couldn't wear the shoe because of the colors. Mm. And it's amazing that his initial story of this shoe and why it really hit and became an urban legend and why everyone gravitated towards it because of that same rebellion. Like, oh, I will pay the fine. Michael Jordan, Nike paid the fines for this guy to wear it and defy the system. That's in his core ingredients, and it's never got lost, even though Michael Jordan never echoed that himself. Mm. He endorsed something that echoed that, that continues to echo that generations later. So when you add up all of these little elements, it adds up to one story that Michael Jordan actually could play both sides. He got his shoe saying, hey, I got the streets, I got rebellion, but I also got me. I ain't saying nothing. All y'all count.
I'll say this about Jordan and Tom Brady. Jordan's like the coolest dude. I've never met him, but he epitomized. He's Shaft. He's whoever we think is the coolest dude.
I've met him.
That's who Michael Jordan
is. He's
cool
as you think he is.
He won.
And, right.
He
and
won.
So I think when you look at it, for black kids, I'm just sorry, everybody wants to be Mike.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, white kids,
they want to be Tom Brady.
Everybody wants to be Tom Brady. Go
ahead, preach. You should say that in the beginning.
Preach. Go ahead, preach.
End of the segment.
I'll take it even one step further. It's just the vanity aspect of it. I don't know how you guys feel, but there is no other athlete that actually has a shoe produced by Nike that even looks to the level of Jordan's. When I see KD's, when I see LeBron James, those shoes, they don't resonate with me. It's not anything that I actually want to go out and purchase, but I think Jordan's have a natural look to them that they're not able to.
Now you just got marketed. They just got you as a, first of all, I'm a sociologist. This is what they do in marketing. When you marry a product to success, all of a sudden you say, oh, it's amazing looking. No, it ain't. It's just you married it to success. Yes. So this is the thing. This Jordan shoe could, if he was sorry, if he had no rings, guess what them shoes would look like?
Hey,
trash.
But think about it.
It's just what it is.
The wristband. How many wristbands did a company came up on wristbands.
Yeah.
How many of the knee sleeve that he turned into a calf sleeve, right? Mm-hmm. How many did they sell of those?
Everything.
So it wasn't even just
symbols
the shoe.
Of success.
It was when I went out the hoop, when I walked to school, I wanted to look like Michael Jordan on the court.
I'm going to give you another one, though, in terms of I think staying out of the most polarizing issues, because even with Tiger Woods' fall, you go into any golf shop, it's all Tiger Woods.
Damn right.
Tiger Woods is the only thing that sells. Mm-hmm. So if you can stay out of those polarizing issues and just market yourself to everybody, you have the best shot. And again, we didn't go here, but I look at this list, and when I see how close Kevin Durant is to LeBron James, that kind of shakes me up. Like, why is Kevin Durant this close to LeBron James? Because people are upset with Durant.
Why is LeBron so far from Mike?
Yeah, but people are upset with Durant from going to Golden State. But other than that, I think people kind of like Kevin Durant.
Yeah, especially. Well,
there's nothing polarizing about him.
Yeah.
Bit of a mama's boy, but he's relatable.
Yeah.
I look at this whole list, and we didn't go here, but LeBron's numbers disappointed me, that he's that far from Michael and Kevin Durant is that close to him. Before we go further, I'd like to give NFL players some advice about preseason football, an expanded regular season schedule, and the new collective bargaining agreement. Get on board with an 18-game schedule and players limited to competing in just 16 of those games. It's the key to saving your golden goose. There's a consensus building among ownership that the NFL will slash the exhibition season by a game or two. Veteran players can't stand the preseason, they don't feel they need it, and they don't believe the risk of injury is worth it. Furthermore, football fans have grown leery of the pricey, meaningless exhibition games. Both Cowboys owner Jerry Jones and Falcons owner Arthur Blank have stated this week that it's likely the league will reduce the exhibition season sooner rather than later. Naturally, they're going to want to recoup the dollars. That means more games that count in the regular season, postseason, or both. I vote the regular season. But it would be a mistake to allow players to compete in all of the new games. Why? Because that would increase the number of players talking about the physical toll the game takes on them. When the mainstream media isn't forcing a conversation about who is and isn't taking a knee and who is and isn't performing at Super Bowl halftimes, the media love to get players to talk about how debilitating football is. That constant exaggerated conversation is undermining the popularity of football. It's an important conversation, and I'm not arguing we shouldn't have it. I'm arguing people who care about the game should be looking for ways to tamp down the hysteria. When people watch an entertainment event, they don't want to believe the performers are killing themselves. The mainstream media are creating that narrative around professional football. They're not doing it to college football. That sport, which doesn't pay its combatants, is run by liberal college presidents, and football directly benefits their agendas and fundraising. No, it's the NFL, which handsomely pays its combatants, that is being demonized. Players need to wisen up and protect the sport that is financially rewarding them. The expanded schedule with player restrictions protects the NFL and its players. The league needs to train its fan base to enjoy games that don't include all of its star players. 10 years from now, the NFL should be playing 18 games with players restricted to 14. 20 years from now, it should be 20 games with players restricted to 14. Giving the players more rest and recovery is how you fight and win the battle over player safety. That's a lot better than former Saints receiver Joe Horn suggesting that the NFL turn into a two-hand touch league. All right, Eric Dickerson and LeVar Arrington have returned. Marcellus, get us started.
Yeah.
You like my idea of embracing 18 games with players restricted on how many games they can play?
Don't take this personal.
Yeah.
Hell no. Bad idea. Bad idea. Think through this. Preseason, no star players, Sean McVay and others. Games don't count. So we like, this is meaningless. So even the owners are sitting there saying, we got to fix this, right? But the fix is not to say, we're going to have regular season games where the games do count, but no star players. So think about it. Yeah. So you passed the buck. You really haven't fixed it. Now, I understand that perfect is the enemy of good. So this is not a perfect solution out there. And is this a good solution? Not really in its totality, because how do you justify those games lost by the star players to those who invest in the total package of a season ticket purchase? So until we can get that fixed on its surface, I don't think you did anything but take it from the preseason and move the problem to the
regular. Only thing I'll say is, like, baseball fans go to the games with the expectation that Justin Verlander is not going to be out there every night. Anyway.
Ooh, 162 games.
I get it.
162 game football schedule.
I get it. They do that in basketball.
All right, that's some money. Now you're going to make money.
I get it, but they don't have this injury issue that NFL has.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think if you want to keep playing the preseason, maybe play one preseason game and just get into the regular season. The 18-game season is just too long. I mean,
they got to recoup the money, though, Eric. Right. If they get rid of all them preseason games, that's less money for the players.
Yeah, but you know, you're saying play 18 games, and then the stars can only play, what, 14 games or 16?
16
yeah,
to 16 start.
16 games. I mean, as a player, just say as a player, you say we're young right now, and we go on the field, and the season's playing, and we done played our 14 games or 16 games. We're still healthy, so I'm not even hurting. I feel good.
Let's get it.
You know, let me play some more. No, you done played your 14 games. Can't play no more. You can't play them last two games. That's like,
Eric, I'm not asking you to be a competitor right now.
I know.
I'm asking you to be a businessman.
No, that's bad business also, because then what if your 15th game, you could have made more money, more sacks,
I say,
more yards?
That's what I say, because then you got the incentives. Think about the incentive. Well, you can't play. I'm like, but I can reach that incentive. That's why the
problem. You only got 16 games to get your stats.
Let's see that.
No, games have been added in the history of the National Football League.
Right.
Yes.
So it has happened before. I would say I'll go somewhat down the road with you, but why say sit them down? I'm going to stay on that side with it.
I'm going to tell you why. Because just like Rob Gronkowski yesterday or a couple days ago when he was talking about CBD, he goes in this long explanation about how the toll of the game. Andrew Luck just retired, the toll of the game. The media is picking up on this and hammering this home. And people are watching the game like, damn, these guys are out here killing themselves. Every player I talk to just said, oh, my God, I can barely get out of bed. That's when the 70s and 80s and 90s, when people watched football, they weren't thinking that. And it's undermining the entertainment value.
I understand that, and I value that. That's a valuable outtake or look on it. But the reality of it is if they're being honest, that's what makes the National Football League, that's what makes college football, that's what makes high school football, that's what makes football so different, is those elements. You only have X amount of games. It's the least of any of the other sports. It is the act of, can you stay healthy during that amount of time? So I think the value of it is, you can't switch it and say two games makes a difference, especially if you're holding out guys of talent that you don't want to get hurt. Definitely. Two games is that's not substantial enough. If you said eight games, but then now
two games can make all the difference in terms of how much money goes to the players.
But not health. If you're taking the health angle, two games is not enough.
Well, if you add two games, that adds to now they're making them play 18. Rob Gronkowski could barely get out of bed, and now look at what the NFL's doing. They're just exploiting these players. I'm asking for a business. How do you protect this business long-term, satisfy the TV networks who are in partnership with you? Trust me, everybody wants more games. How do you execute it without driving that health
conversation? I think the NFL has done a tremendous job of saying, how do we protect our business? We mind our business. Case in point, Roger Goodell gets hammered constantly in the media. And part of it he brought on himself. If he wasn't in charge of discipline and he just grew the game like he has grown the game, this dude would be beyond lauded, because what he's done to the bottom line is just incredible. But because he's in charge of discipline, you got shots taken at him. But the NFL also knows we can be Teflon to Roger Goodell, because we're still going to move forward. So why not be Teflon to this situation in terms of we still have to move forward? You got to understand that games have been added historically but never subtracted. So this whole 14 games, where? Why? What's the precedent for that?
Because you have to react to new information. Mm-hmm. The Washington Post just wrote a story yesterday about Barry Sanders was dumped on by the media across the board when he retired. Andrew Luck was pretty much lauded when he retired for the same kind of reasons. And what the point of the article was, Barry Sanders was the villain. 20 years later, football is the villain. Mm-hmm. And that's not a healthy place for football to be in long term. This assault on football and this whole thing about, oh my God, the costs are just too much, and how can these guys play it, and we should all turn our backs on football.
You have to have a counter for that.
Yes.
That conversation is not going away. And the more, because again, I keep seeing people that watch football, and now when they watch the game, somebody gets knocked out. I'm gonna be honest with you. We used to celebrate that.
Hell yeah.
Got jacked up! And I loved it, and I still celebrate it.
Big hits, you call it.
But a lot of people are watching now like, oh, God, that's terrible. Oh, I'm not, it happened to boxing. Boxing used to be the king. And they did the same kind of assault on boxing.
No, don't do that. Now you're conflating. Okay, one, you're right. We used to celebrate the big hits, and now we're like, ooh, you know why? Because we actually know that dude, we think. Social media, the big man, personable. We're like, damn, he was just with his kids yesterday.
Anytime somebody gets knocked out, you got people,
oh my God, he's going to have CTE. Uh-uh. He won't be able to remember who his mama is tomorrow.
I'm not done with you because you just went to boxing. Right. And you know what happened to boxing? It wasn't the assault on boxing. It was the NFL's emergence. The 6'3" dude who was 240 decided, do I want to be heavyweight champion in the world or a DN to make more money?
There's a pie, Marcellus. It's a combination.
Okay. Okay, so I give you that.
There's truth in what you're saying. Yeah. There's truth in what
NFL I'm saying. Actually.
Go to a Saturday game. Go to State College and go on Friday or Saturday, and you'll see how much.
It's not under attack in college football because it benefits liberals. Trust me. Trust me. Whitlock and Wiley, LeVar Arrington and Stanford Router back. Let's return to the NFL. Sponsored by the Capital One Venture Card. What's in your wallet? All right, let's move to a guy who can't seem to stop talking, Mark Cuban, who was asked this week about the differences between the NBA and the NFL and had a lot to say about how and why the league's marketing strategies are so different.
Sells the NFL. The NBA sells its players, right? The NFL markets the NFL. The NBA markets its players, and players drive who we are in the NBA. Like I said earlier, you couldn't identify 90% of NFL players if they were standing right in front of you. That's big part of their core problem. If you look at the NBA, the social media followings of NFL players, it's not that big, right? I mean, I don't even know who the largest is in the NFL, but, you know, what do they have? You know, they probably have fewer followers than I do on Twitter. And so that's an issue for NFL players. And I'm thinking it's by design from the NFL because that's what gives them more leverage.
It's also what makes football a better business and more popular, generates more money. It's not a problem. It's actually a strength of the NFL. Mark, they got a big problem. They don't have the Twitter followers that we have. Y'all don't have the viewers, the season ticket holders, the jersey sales. Stop it, Mark Cuban. 90% of the guys in the NFL we wouldn't recognize. 90% of his team people wouldn't recognize if they wasn't 6'8". I mean, get real. And so this is what kills me about this constant. The media loves to throw a mic in somebody's face. Here, talk dirt on the NFL and tell us how much better basketball is. But they can never back it up with ratings, revenue generation, passion, any of it. But, oh, my God, LeBron's got 30 million Twitter followers. NBA's better. Is that the scoreboard is Twitter now?
Ooh, we're live. You backed it up with passion. I'm going to say that. Damn. You going to tag me in?
Yes,
you gonna
please.
Just this on your own? I'm on the top rope ready to jump in. And I'm going to jump in with Mark Cuban because I actually agree with him. No, you're right and he's right, but here's the real. Learned this from my player rep experience, 9 of my 10 years, NFLPA going to Hawaii every year. The NFL, markets the shield.
The shield.
Then they protect the uniform. And they don't prioritize the individual. And one thing, one incident, one rule change really highlights it. The Emmitt Smith rule. Y'all remember
Take
that? 1997. Emmitt used to get in the end zone, and he got in the end zone a lot.
Right on up.
Try to get his NBA on. See my face?
Yep.
And he was benefiting. And the NBA was
the
sitting
NFL.
There.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, the NBA sits there and is like, that's what we already do. That's status quo over here. And Emmitt was doing that. And then NFL sat back and said, these marketing deals are starting to go individual instead of through us collectively. We may have to stop that. And boom, there's the Emmitt Smith rule. Why do I understand the NFL's business practice and I respect it like you? Because what it does is make sure that you can grab any player from Tom Brady on down and rotate, rinse, and repeat that guy. So from Joe Montana with the days when he was retired. Oh, Steve Young. Oh, no. Who was Tom Brady's going to retire? Guess what? Patrick Mahomes. Like, they're going to rotate, rinse, and repeat. That's the NFL's way. But Cuban does have an astute point. like he was in Hawaii with us. Because the NFL said, we're not even trying to hide it. We made a rule against it.
That is true.
This is the way we roll.
That is true.
And I think, to your point, Marcellus, you alluded to it perfectly, that for Mark Cuban to say everything that he just said, I understand the point that he's trying to make, but from a proximity and just from a systematic standpoint, that's where I think that it's very disingenuous for him to make that, simply because we can all tell that NBA players, they're more marketable because guess what? They don't have a face mask around their face.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So it's easy to see him. Yeah. And then when you go to the global aspect of it, I can't tell you how many times I've been overseas or just in another country, and I got to actually put American football on whenever I talk about college football, NFL, things like that. So people are easily able to relate to the NBA because basketball is played in every country in the world. Mm. It's right up there along with soccer. Mm. And then lastly, I think that a lot of people also have to remember that we can go to any gym, rec center, you can see guys running up and down the court, 5-on-5. Simply doing it just for exercise, stress relief. It's therapeutic. Mm. But let me ask you this. Are you ever going to see on a field somewhere NFL guys playing 7-on-7, 11-on-11, and it's not something that is team mandated or organized just for therapeutic reason,
it's
just
not
for
a rec
stress
sport.
Relief, or just simply just being just recreationally. So whenever you go and you see up there in New York, NBA players doing 5-on-5 up there at the gym, they do that just because it's exercise and it's stress relief. It's therapeutic for them. But NFL players, you'll never see that.
I think another point to add to the discussion would be, you're talking about marketing and branding five guys. In basketball, you play offense and you play defense. There is no special teams, right? But in football, you have special teams, you have offense, and you have defense, and there is a different unit. There is a different unit for each special teams. Kickoff, kickoff return, punt,
hands,
punt
team.
Return, hands team, right? Hands team. Onside team.
There's a third down defense.
All different. There's a nickel. Second down. Nickel. There's nickel. There's dime. There's penny. So when you're talking about not knowing if you're going to throw that out there, I mean, you have the same situation in baseball. I wouldn't know a baseball player if I saw. Yeah, I really wouldn't.
Okay.
So the reality of it is I'm going to take the popularity of what the sport is, and because social media is where it is right now, those marketing dollars that the NFL is coming up with rules with and doing all these different things to try to maintain that, I'm still going to make sure that I get my piece of it.
Let me enlighten everyone. Tim Ellis, the NFL just made a hire last year of Tim Ellis. They've heard what Mark Cuban was saying, because Tim Ellis comes from a background of marketing Guitar Hero, Call of Duty, getting the younger fans and people involved and engaged. So they understand they even have a problem. They're turning the corner on this issue of marketing the individual. We'll see.
Problem to me is a big word. You know, the NBA would love to have the NFL's $15 billion problem. Would love to have that.
Yeah,
and so if I'm getting my butt kicked in revenue, in rating, in relevance, the NFL is the number one show on five different television networks. Mm. If I'm getting my butt kicked all them, you know what? I'm going to move the scoreboard to Twitter. Let's go to Twitter and make that the scoreboard. We win at Twitter. Good luck with that. Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for Zeke Elliott. Marcellus said some really dumb stuff today.
All day, for real.
I know what you're going to do today.
Big dummy of the day. Go to the person that said, all little white kids want to be Tom Brady. Why? Because he's just the winningest quarterback in NFL history? You just think little white kids want to be Tom Brady? Hell, I just want to win. little black kids don't want to win?
Make it racial.
Let's talk Ezekiel Elliott, who is still holding out down in Cabo. Ooh. And Jerry Jones is now saying there's no timetable to get Zeke's deal done.
Nope.
Marcellus, you think Zeke is eventually going to get what he wants here?
Todd Gurley money? No, I don't think it's going to happen, man. First of all, being in Cabo is not helping your cause. Having Marshall talk for you instead of your agents not helping your cause. Jerry Jones' ego is now involved. You can see the tone change.
They can't win without Zeke. He's going to get it.
I'll give you that.
Uncle Jimmy, I know you on my side. He going to get his money.
Can he win? Is he going to get what he wants? He ain't going to get what he want. Mm. He might get what he need. The boy down there training in Cabo, man.
Yeah.
So that's screaming the fact that the boy got champagne budget on an old English paycheck. The boy ain't in the right mindset to even talk about a holdout.
OD, huh?
The boy should be at a 24-hour fitness somewhere in the suburbs of Dallas saving money for the holdout.
That's so
he talking about he in good shape.
So true.
All right? He ain't in financial shape. Jerry Jones, 96 years old. His bank account will whoop Zeke's ass on any day.
That's the point. Zeke's going to get his money. I do like your point, though. I don't know if I would be conducting
Zeke a holdout
for Cabo.
Zeke give him to whatever the hell Jerry Jones want to give him.
The optics.
Jerry Jones knows how much it costs to hang out in Cabo for 3 months. Okay, now Jerry Jones is a billionaire to know how to live frugally. He still got a flip phone. So Zeke is done and dumb. Zeke, because right about now, Zeke is beginning to see them bills pile up.
Mm.
Y'all know how we do. Mm. Y'all know how we get out there and live above our means.
Cabo
he
is
down people. There maxing out the MasterCard.
The Master.
The Discover card.
Yeah,
he
yeah.
done maxed out the race card. Not to feel ashamed. Not to be ashamed. A lot of brothers done that. Fooled with Cap in the last week. Man, he calling Dez like, Dez, can you cash out for brother a couple hundred?
I caught that.
Hey, boy, y'all see Uncle Jimmy hurried up and got his ass back here, don't you?
Uh-huh.
Hey, if it wasn't for Groupon, I wouldn't have been down in Cabo. Hey, boy, it's expensive down there. You hear me? Hey, boy, me and the Blue M&M stayed in one room.
Okay.
We stayed in one room.
You and the Blue M&M stayed in one.
Hey, and I ain't even gonna lie to y'all. Hey, we got put out of there. Marvelous. Didn't what? Nobody tell me you couldn't take them little hot plates and crock pots down in the villa? Man, we had it hotter than a Baptist convention up in there. Smelling off.
Y'all was
you know, hey, and when we was in Cabo, I told Zeke, I said, hey, man, instead of paying all that money to Marshall Faulk, go holler at my cousin, Big Butchie. He just opened a gym over his mama's garage down there in Dallas. Hey, man, he got all his fitness paperwork. It took him 10 years. He just got out of being released from the penal system.
Big Butch.
You know, man, he
train.
Can hook Zeke up with some of them prison workouts for a reasonable price. And I'm going to tell you one thing that my cousin can offer him that can't nobody else offer him. Won't nobody catch him from behind.
I'm not touching that. Yeah. I got
won't
Zeke.
Touch him either.
I got Zeke at a role player at 65.
Mm.
Drop him in job performance. He's down in Cabo. But I raised him up two in character and two in authenticity. Mm. 65.
Mm. Mm. Did y'all get on the elevators, you and the Blue M&Ms? Can't do that in Cabo either. But I had to drop the job performance. You are in Cabo. I had to drop the
business,
character
because
Marshall's
business.
Talking for you. And authenticity, man. Keep it real. You know what you want. Go
all
on
right.
out there.
Twitter has him at a dumpster fire.
Yeah, it's getting lower.
38% of voters. Wow. Get
it. The penal system, what'd you
Zeke
call it?
Zeke is, we'll get Big Butchie on that.
Ha ha ha.